Shiva-satam svitam svya He Krishna karnasindo dinabando jagatate Gopesha gopika kanta radha kanta namostute Tata kanchena gorangi radhe vrindavaneshri Prishuvanu sudadevi pranamami hari priye Vanchakapa trubhyascha kripa sinubhivacha Patidanam bhavaneyo vaishnavevyo namo namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shadvaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 18, The Battle Between Lord Boar and Hiranyaksha, Text Number 3. Aha, enam, ehi, agya, mahim, vimucha, vimuncha, naha, rasa, okasam, vishva, srija, iyam, Arpita na swasti yasyasi anaya mama ikshata sura adama asadita sukara akrite ahainam eyagyamahim vimunshano Rasokasam Vishva Sri Jayam Arpita Naswasti Yasyasyanaya Mamekshata Saradama Sadita Sukrita Krite Ahainam eya gaya mahim vimunchano Rasokta sam vishva sri jayam arpita Rasvasti yasyana yamikshata Suradama satita sukrita sukarakrite
Suradama satita sukarakrite
Ahainame gaya mahima vimuchano
Ahainame gaya mahima
vimuchano Rasokasam vishva sri jayam arpita
Rasokasam vishva sri jayam arpita
Swasti yasya yana yama mekshata
Swasti yasya yana yama mekshata
Suradama sadita sukara krite
Suradama sadita sukara
krite Ahayana mekya kiyama kini munchana
Ahayana mekya kiyama kini
Ahainamayayamahimavimshano Prasoka Samishva Srike Marpita. Swasti Yasya Naya Namalekshita. Suradama Sadita Sukarakrite. Ladies. Ahaina Vega Namahima Nukshano. Prasoka Sam Vishra Srike Arpita. Swasti Yasya Naya Namalekshita. Saradama Sarita Sukarakrite. Ahaina Vegaya Himamukshano. Prasoka Samishva Sukhaya Marpita. Swasti Asya Naya Mekshata. Saradama Sarita Sukarakrite. Aha. Hiranyaksha said, Enam to the Lord. Ehi. Come and fight. Agya. O fool. Mahim. The earth. Vimuncha. Give up. Naha to us, rasa oktasam, of the inhabitants of the lower regions, Vishvasrija, by the creator of the universe, Iyam, this earth, Arpita, entrusted. Not. Swasti, well-being. Yes, you see. You will go. Anaya, with this. Mama, ikshataha, while I am seeing. Sura Adama, O lowest of the demigods. Asarita, having taken Sukara Akrite, the form of a boar. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The demon addressed the Lord, O best of the demigods, dressed in the form of a boar, just hear me. This earth is entrusted to us, the inhabitants of the lower regions, and you cannot take it from my presence and not be hurt by me. Purport. Sridhar Swami, commenting on this verse, states that although the demon wanted to deride the personality of Godhead in the form of a boar, actually he worshipped him in several words. For example, he addressed him as Vana Gochara, which means one who is a resident of the forest. But another meaning of Vana Gochara is one who lies in the water. Vishnu lies in the water. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be properly addressed in this way. The demon also addressed him as Mriga, indicating unintentionally that the Supreme Personality is sought after by great sages, saintly persons, and transcendentalists. He also addressed him as Agya. Sridhar Swami says that Agya means knowledge, and there is no knowledge which is unknown to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Indirectly, therefore, the demon said that Vishnu knows everything. The demon addressed him as Suradama. Sura means the demigods, and Adama means the Lord of all there is. He is the Lord of all the demigods. Therefore, he is the best of all the demigods, or God. When the demon used the phrase, in my presence, the implied meaning was In spite of my presence, you are completely able to take away the earth. Unless you kindly take this earth from our custody, there can be no good fortune for us. Ahinam yegya mahim yumuchano prasoka samvishva sri jayam arpita nasvastyasya yarnaya amekshata suradama sadita sukharakite. The demon addressed the Lord, all best of the demigods, dressed in the form of a boar. Just hear me. This earth is entrusted to us, the inhabitants of the lower regions, and you cannot take it from my presence and not be hurt by me. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Purushottaya Bhutaye Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tadamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskatya Desatarne. Sridhar Swami is giving us another side of the conversation between Lord Bora and Hiranyaksha. Superficially, it appears that Lord Bora is being insulted, or that Hiranyaksha is insulting Lord Bora. But here we find that Hiranyaksha is glorifying Lord Bora. Now the question is this simply a trick by the commentator Sridhar Swami in order to make Lord Krishna look better than he really is? Is it just a play of Sanskrit? Or is it a philosophical point that the whole universe goes on under the direction of Krishna? In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna states, Bhavanam jandanamante jnanamamam prapadite vasudeva sarvamiti sura mahatma sudurlabha. That a mahatma, he sees that there's nothing but Krishna. And besides that, why would Srila Vyasadeva include insulting words in the Srimad Bhagavatam against Krishna? The whole idea of the Bhagavatam is Dharma Prayodita Kaitavotra Paramonimatsaranam Satam. It is not meant for envious people. It is not that the demons, they read the Bhagavatam and they're very depressed. But then they come up to this point and think, oh, finally there's some wisdom. So the whole Bhagavatam is meant for those who are not envious of Krishna. It completely rejects everything that's envious in this material world. Envious means ultimately envious against Krishna. Ichcha dvesha samutena dvandva mohana bharata sarva bhutani samaham sargeyanti parantapa. That all the yantis in this world are born into delusion, overcome by the dualities of desire and hate. People are principally desiring to become God, and they hate the fact that they can't do it. They want to be the laws of nature, but material nature is always kicking us. Or kicking them. And here, there is a demon. Not an ordinary demon. Not a little demon. This demon is said to be half the size of the universe. Big demon. But this demon is not an ordinary demon. He's one, formerly one of the gatekeepers of Vaikuntha. And by his desire to serve Krishna, he's serving him in a capacity of a demon half the size of the universe. Not everyone gets such an opportunity to serve Krishna in that way. And service to Krishna means he has to take the part of a demon. Otherwise, as we know, that Krishna had some desire to fight, and one of his gatekeepers, or two of them, Jai and Vijay, decided to satisfy that desire of the Lord, and therefore they came as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. The desire there is to serve Krishna, and therefore, as demons, they had to properly pay the part of a demon. We find that in the Bhagavatam, servants of Krishna, they play their part. It is not that Hiranyaksha, he thinks, well, being a demon is not very good. I'm actually a gatekeeper within. Maybe I should say something nice to Krishna, just so that when I get back to Vaikuntha, he's not angry with me for insulting him. In the Bhagavatam, we find a person like Priyavrata, who is sitting on the Gandamandana hill, receiving instructions from Narada Muni about renunciation. He wanted to renounce the whole universe, although his father, Swayambhuva Manu, at that time, the Manus were in charge of the whole universe. For instance, if we had a very wealthy father who was a multi-billionaire, it would be very hard to become a devotee, because we think, well, if I dissatisfy my father, he won't give me my inheritance. I won't get millions and billions of dollars. So better I act like a normal person. But here we find Priyavrata, he didn't care about inheriting the universe. And he inherited the universe is worth much more than a few billion dollars. But still, he was not interested in it. He was simply interested in perfecting his life and going back to the spiritual world. But Lord Brahma came with Swayambhuva Manu, because Swayambhuva Manu, he had already surpassed his time allotted to rule the universe, and he wanted to hand it over to his son. But Priyavrata was not interested, therefore he had to come with some reinforcements. Therefore he came with Lord Shiva, Lord Indra, Lord Brahma, and a few other demigods. In other words, Narada Muni is one of the Mahajans, Lord Brahma is one of the Mahajans, Lord Shiva is one of the Mahajans, Swayambhuva Manu is one of the Mahajans. So it was three Mahajans against one, requesting that Priyavrata take up the rule of the universe so his father could retire. Narada Muni had to agree, and Priyavrata, he also had to agree. But in order to rule the universe, one has to get married, because in order to rule the universe, one has to perform sacrifices. Ruling the universe doesn't mean, as it does nowadays, you sit at home and watch television or videos and collect taxes. Have your ministers go out and collect taxes so you can get a bigger swimming pool. That's not ruling the universe. That's not what it means. It means that one has to make sure that the universe goes on properly. The Vedic leaders were not such fools to think that life is meant for sense gratification. They knew that whatever they do, they get either a positive result from it or a negative result. And if the result was negative as a leader, then it would influence many persons and they become responsible for the negative results for many persons, not only for their own negative actions, but for the negative actions of so many persons who they were supposed to guide. Gurona sasya, svajanona sasya. Therefore, no one should become a father, a mother, a worshipful demigod, a guru, if one is not able to deliver their descendants from the cycle of birth and death. Priyavrata Maharaj knew well that taking up the universe meant that he had to deliver the people in the universe, do what was necessary so that they had the best opportunity to make spiritual progress. And best opportunity to make spiritual progress means there has to be performance of sacrifice, because the universe runs on sacrifice. It doesn't run on gasoline. It runs on sacrifice. And in order to perform sacrifice, you need a wife, because that's how it works. Properly performing sacrifice, the wife has to be there. Even Lord Ramachandra, after banishing Sita into the forest, he needed a wife to perform sacrifices, so he created deities of Sita out of gold. And of course, there's no difference between the deity and on the absolute platform. Therefore, Sita is still there in the form of a deity, and he was able to perform sacrifices. But at the same time, Priyavrata had no real attraction for his wife. That sounds terrible, doesn't it? Here in the material world, we have no attraction to our wife. The wife is, or for instance, sometimes the devotees, they join the movement, and they think, oh, now I have no attraction to my family. And the mother comes and says, kiss me, honey. And goes, no, get away from me, I don't want to. Don't touch me. And the mother goes, oh, what's happened to my son? He's become so cold and indifferent. And everyone gets very disturbed and upset. Instead of becoming joyful, always become a devotee. He's going to spread love of God. Oh, he's become cruel and indifferent, even to his own mother. What to speak of anyone else? He can't even touch his own mother. He has no feelings left. They robbed his mind of all feelings, and now he's one of those machines serving the chief, the cult leader. So this is what people think, and that's not very favorable. Similarly, Prevrata became the head of the universe, thinking, oh, what a bad deal I got. I wanted to go back to the spiritual world. Now I have to rule over this dead universe. How unfortunate I am. And I have to get some wife. And she's going to want kids, and they're going to wake me up at night. How am I going to rule the universe? Hard enough being a ruler, but with kids and a wife. She's going to tell me how I'm going to rule the universe too. But still he got married, and he performed the sacrifices, and he acted just like a normal husband. Normal husband means that his wife, she also had to play a part. Not that I have a husband, he doesn't care about me, so what do I care about him? Why should I try to please him? Why should I dress nicely? Why should I perform any activities for his happiness? Because he doesn't like me anyhow. No, she acted, she dressed very nicely, she talked very pleasingly, she served him very nicely, and he reciprocated and acted just like a henpecked husband. She said, dear, can you take the garbage? Yes, dear, no problem. Right away. Although his rule of the universe, although he had no attraction for the material platform for his wife. We should not think that when we say no attraction for the material platform, that means one is cold and indifferent. It means that one actually has real feelings. Material attraction based upon lust and anger and greed is just superficial attraction based on the modes of nature. It's not real attraction from the soul. That if one is beyond that, that's where real love begins. And on the platform of real love, one can do what's necessary to please the beloved, to benefit the beloved in the best possible way. So Prevrata acted like that because he knew that it served many purposes. It pleased his wife that she was doing her service nicely. It pleased the people. It showed a good example for the people in general. At the same time, he performed his duty. Therefore, although one thing seemed apparent, but there was something else going on internally within himself, because internally within himself, he was beyond the modes of nature, playing a part. Always thinking of Krishna within himself, always making spiritual progress. Always seeing everything and everyone in relation to Krishna, including his own wife. Similarly, here we find apparently something's going on externally, but there's another internal understanding. That internal understanding is that there's nothing but Krishna and Krishna's energies, and the Bhagavatam is specifically meant to glorify Krishna. And even the demons who are taking part, these special demons who have direct association with Krishna, are in their own way glorifying Krishna. If Hiranyakashipu or Hiranyaksha, who was half the size of the universe, didn't fight against Krishna, then how would we know how powerful Krishna is? Even Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, as Kamsa said, what's the big deal? lifting Govardhan Hill. It's just like a little pebble. A little pebble called Govardhan Hill. Because for the universe, in comparison to the universe of the planet, Govardhan Hill is just a little pebble. When he heard that Krishna had defeated Kaliya, Kamsa said, so he defeated one big water snake. What's the big deal? Because relatively speaking, that's what Kaliya was, just a big water snake. Even when Krishna fought against Dhenukasura, according to our acharyas, Dhenukasura picked up Govardhan Hill and threw it at Krishna. So even Dhenukasura could pick up the Govardhan Hill. Of course, I don't know if he could have held it for 7 days in his little pinky. He didn't have enough time. He was too busy throwing it at Krishna. But he was powerful enough to pick it up, and then Krishna caught it, and then threw it back to Dhenukasura. Unfortunately, Dhenukasura was not a very good baseball player. Therefore, he didn't catch it. As a matter of fact, he got hit by the hill and knocked unconscious for 8 hours. Took a little rest. In any case, he was quite a powerful personality. But when we hear that Krishna fought against Lord Vora, or Lord Vora fought against Hiranyaksha, the Hiranyaksha, he was huge, gigantic demon. He had, by his exploitations, had practically thrown the earth into the ocean. And this is not this little earth globe that we're on. It's understood that it was the whole Bhumandala, which is much bigger than this little tiny earth planet that we're presently on. Bharatvarsha, just a little part of Jambudvipa. But it was a whole Ilyavarta and Plakshadvipa and all these different dvipas. He had thrown it all down, and here Lord Vora comes and lifts it up. So that's much bigger than lifting Govardhan Hill, much more significant. And then defeating the person who threw it down is the glorification of Krishna. Then we can understand Krishna is so powerful that if he can lift up the Bhumandala, certainly he can lift up my consciousness. Although my consciousness may be almost as heavy as Bhumandala, still we can assure that he can lift it up somehow or another. And Hiranyaksha, he's playing the part. Therefore, Mother Saraswati is forming his words that they have simultaneously two meanings. One is the meaning, playing the part of the demon, and the other is the inner meaning, so that this is actually glorification of Krishna. For instance, it says here that he's the resident of the forest. So that's not such a bad thing, being a resident of the forest. He is a resident of the forest. He's a resident of Vrindavan. The Vrindavan forest. And here it says he lies in the water. So Lord Vishnu certainly lies in the water. He lies in the water and he's sleeping. But when he's sleeping, everything happens. When we go to sleep, nothing happens. Just some snores come out. Make some sounds sometimes. But when he sleeps, then everything goes on. At least in the material. That's the difference between us and him. And the demon addresses as Mriga. So that usually means animal, but it means one who's sought after by great sages and saintly persons. So we find that there may be so many seemingly things going on externally in the Bhagavatam, but there's always an inner meaning. The inner meaning is the Bhagavatam is full of Yad-vā-chāt-chitra-padāṁ-hariyāri-so-niyat-niyat-vā-chāt-chitra-padāṁ-hariyāri-so-yigāt-parvitāṁ-parī-grīha-kārī-chit-pedvāya-santīr-du-shandhi-manasā-niyat-tira-haṁ-sā-niyar-mantī-shikṣayā. Now those words which are not connected with Krishna, although they may be very poetically made, are just like the places of pilgrimage for the crows. The all saintly persons, the residents of the transcendental abode, they don't take any pleasure in it. But these words are directed towards Krishna, And therefore, the devotees, when they hear it, they become ecstatic, even the words spoken by Hiranyaksha, because they understand what's actually going on. Yad bhag vipuavo, janatabha vipuavo, yadmin prakishlokam abhadavatipi, namane nantasya shankitaniya, shinvanti gayanti grinanti sadhava. That even Hiranyaksha's words are the words of, can be taken as glorification of Krishna, and help us appreciate Krishna even more. That even the demons, when they come in contact with Krishna, their words become sublime. This is the truth, for instance, when Jarasandha saw Krishna coming out of Dwarka Fort. No, it was actually Mathura. Jarasandha, as you probably know, he was Jarasandha. He was formed together by Jara, a witch in the forest. That the king, somehow or another, he performed some sacrifice, and two queens took the remnants of the sacrifice, but they had, each had a half a son. But half a son, when two queens have half a son, it doesn't add up to a whole son. So the king took the two halves of the sons and threw them into the forest. There was no garbage disposal or anything. Just threw it into the forest. And one witch came along and saw the flesh, and she was thought, wow, what a nice meal. So, some usefulness. Generally, for instance, in the Vedic culture, they burn the body, but if it was, if the body wasn't even born, then there's no purpose of burning a dead body that was dead from birth. So they just threw it into the forest because they knew someone would eat it. It had some, served some purpose. So Jara came along, she was hungry, she said, well, two halves of a body, how nice. But she thought, it looks like a puzzle, and she joined them together. And indeed, it was like a puzzle, and she joined them in the right way, and they became alive, and Jarasandha was born. But Jarasandha was a demon. And his friend was Kamsa. And therefore he gave his two wives, his two daughters, Hasti and Prasuti, to Kamsa as his wives. And at the death of Kamsa, they both came to Jarasandha and complained. The king, in that time, if he complained to them, they did something about it. Not that you were run over by a car, you called the police, they came 3 hours later, made a report, and filed it away. And that was the end of it. Or in some countries, in Africa, the devotees, one life member who was a devotee, he was robbed in broad daylight. And so his wife escaped, called up the police, and the police said, do they have any guns? And she said, yes, they have AK-47s. And the police said, no problem, we'll be there sometime. So 3 hours later, the police came to make the report. They would not come, because the thieves were better armed than they are. Besides that, why he killed is because trying to stop a theft doesn't make any sense. But there, they made a complaint to the kings, they did something. Therefore, Jarasandha decided to rid the whole world of the Yadu dynasty. And he collected together 23 Akshahini divisions of soldiers. There's a lot of soldiers. Practically, I think, if you add it all up, it came out to like maybe 10 million soldiers. And he surrounded Mathura, attacking it. And Krishna Balaram came out with just, it says, Alpashita, which means just a little tiny band of soldiers to fight against this huge army. You can imagine 10 million soldiers surrounding the city. They surrounded, you know, Liege, 10 million soldiers. I think probably everyone would just give up. There wouldn't be any fight. But Krishna came out with just a few soldiers, And Jarasandha, because he was a related to Krishna and Balaram, they were his nephews. Therefore he became a little compassionate and he started to say, you know, why don't you just go away? I don't want to fight and kill you all. And then he said some other words. I'll just read the translation. Oh, I'll read the Sanskrit. Tavahama magado viksha he krishna purusharama natvaya yudum ichami vale naikena lajaya guptena hi tvaya manda yokshaya hi banduha. Jarasandha looked at two of them and said, oh Krishna, lowest of men, I do not wish to fight alone with you, since you would be ashamed to fight with a mere boy. You fools who keep yourself hidden, O murderer of your relatives, go away. I will not fight with you. So this is the purport. Sridhar Swami has interpreted Jarasandha's words as follows. Purusharama can be understood as Purusha-arama yasma, meaning Krishna, to whom all men are inferior. In other words, here Lord Krishna is being addressed as O Purushottama, best of living beings, instead of Purushottama, lowest of all human beings. Similarly, the word guptena, hidden, indicates Lord Krishna's aspect of being in everyone's heart and invisible to material vision. The words tvaya, manda, can also be divided according to Sanskrit grammar as tvaya amanda. In this case, Jarasandha is indicating that Krishna is not foolish, but rather most alert. The word bandhu was used by Jarasandha in the sense of relative, since Lord Krishna killed his maternal uncle Kamsa. However, bandhu comes from the verb bandha, to bind, and therefore bandhuha can be understood as one who destroys the bondage of ignorance. Similarly, the word yahi, please go, indicates that Lord Krishna should approach the living beings and bless them to become Krishna conscious. So there's also Shishupal, as we know, when he was at the sacrifice, and Krishna was elected as the chief of the sacrifice. Shishupal stood up with his sword and started blaspheming Krishna, saying, how is it possible in assembly with many learned, erudite persons, a mere boy, Sahadev, could bewilder everyone's intelligence and have this rascal Krishna get elected as the chief of the sacrifice? And he criticized Krishna in many different ways, but the great commentator, Sridhar Swami, again, explains all his criticism as praise. Similarly, Rukmini, when she was talking to Krishna, after Krishna had told Rukmini, my dear Rukmini, somehow or another, we've been together for a long time as husband and wife, but I really have to tell you the truth now. We've been together for around 120 years, but it's time I told you the truth. The truth is, I never really loved you from the beginning. That actually, you thought I was a Kshatriya, but no one really knows who I am. That, why don't you go out and find a better husband than me? So Rukmini was getting really bewildered. In the Veda culture, modern culture, you think, yeah, it's about time we divorced. But in the Veda culture, there was no divorce. It was unheard of. Therefore, she became very anxious and fell unconscious. And when she woke up, Krishna explained to her that actually he was just jesting with her. But then she explained all his different remarks in a way that was wonderful, that were all praising Krishna. That actually Krishna, he has no material attraction for anyone. He's in the heart, he's not hidden, he didn't hide himself in Dwarka, beyond the range of the kings, because he's already in everyone's heart, he's the ruler of all the kings. That Krishna is not belonging to any caste because he's transcendental. So this way Rukmini praised Krishna, and Krishna was very satisfied. The truth behind his marks remarks were actually revealed. So the devotees means that they could always understand how behind everything is a praise of Krishna. And the demons think that they're actually winning the battle or that they're criticizing Krishna. Or that Krishna is being criticized by someone. But actually, ultimately Saraswati will always be praising Krishna. And there will be always a hidden meaning there, which is in praise of Krishna, due to the mercy of Saraswati. That nothing goes on except for Krishna, the Keshava Kasmiri Pandit. He recited 100 verses, praising the Ganges, swift as the mind, but Lord Chaitanya was able to pick out the 64th verse and explain it in such a way that he was able to find the faults which seemingly didn't exist. And then the Keshava Kasmiri could not understand how his worshipful deity Saraswati had blocked his intelligence. He blocked his intelligence because she's not the servant of the Keshava Kasmiri, she's the servant of Krishna. Therefore, whatever she gave intelligence, she gave to the Keshava Kasmiri, was in service to Krishna. And when Keshava Kasmiri was in front of Krishna, she was not going to have him defeat her worshipful lords. She had him recite verses in such a way as that ultimately Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is glorified. So we'll find that throughout the whole Bhagavatam. Anyone who comes in contact with Krishna, even out of lust or anger or greed, whatever, that ultimately whatever they do is going to be utilized in service to Krishna, either directly or indirectly glorifying. So I'll stop here. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. Well, he has to kill demons. Why not? How else is he going to kill the demons unless he fights? He wants to fight because he wants to protect his devotees. He has a purpose behind it. Krishna doesn't just go out and think, well, I had a bad day, who can I fight with? No, he always has a purpose which is beneficial to everyone. Whatever he does is beneficial. When Krishna steals, it benefits people. Not that Krishna's hungry because Mother Yasoda wouldn't feed him. If he goes out and steals butter from other houses, no, he gives them the opportunity to associate with him. So Krishna comes, when he fights, it shows how powerful he is. At the same time, even if he kills a demon, when he fights, the demon is benefited. It's the absolute nature of the Lord. Why should Krishna not fight? Why should he know? Some demon comes up to Krishna and he says, you want to fight? And Krishna goes, no, no, I'm God, I don't fight. I don't know how to fight. Mother Yasoda and Maharaj, they just taught me how to tend cows, they never taught me how to fight. Krishna knows everything. He knows how to fight, so why shouldn't he fight? And benefit people from his fighting. Yeah, of course. You should always be gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen. Don't touch me, get away from me. You're a demon. Meat eater, a rascal. Oh, my son has become so advanced in Krishna. Hell, what a wonderful woman he's charming. Such sweet words are coming from his mouth. Of course, if we would have been a little more intelligent, we could have saved our parents and ourselves a lot of grief. Or maybe we can still do it. Yes?
Yes, no problem. But other than that, actually, the founder of Santikal Movement in Spain, I know she's the vice president of Santikal Movement in Europe, and she's pretty old. She's like, I would say, more than 70 years old. It's a lady that her son, the
Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grandiraj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Gaura Premanande.